The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. It's 8 minutes after 7. Lucretia, with her theme, is back. Hey, Lucretia, you sent me an email over the weekend. I hadn't had a chance to dive deeply in it. You want to give me a quick explanation about the attack on farming in Idaho? It's not just the state of Oregon. Interesting.
Well, you know, they're taking out the cows, they're taking out the chickens, taking out the milk cows. I mean, now they're taking out even the ability for us to get potatoes.
Really?
Idaho grows over 500 million, I think it's a half a million acres of land for growing potatoes.
Yes.
And there's 6,000 farmers being affected. The reservoirs are totally full. And they're saying, sorry, you don't get any water. So all these farmers, 6,000, have already planted. And it's cost a couple thousand per acre just to plant.
Oh yeah, it's water intensive in the summertime there too. What is the rationale for having full reservoirs but nothing for the farmers in the is it one particular reservoir or is it a series of reservoirs in Idaho? Do you recall?
And you know, Colorado used to grow potatoes, and they could actually I've read the documents. They could get people to get it to rain whenever they wanted, that type of thing.
Yeah, is the rationale being used once again fish habitat, or is it something else, some other intrusion?
You know, they didn't say in the interview, but I don't know if Mr. X could help them get on this or somebody. I mean, these farmers are being destroyed.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Mr. X can help. Mr. X is trying his best to help us first. But you know.
Oh, I know, but there's got to be something else, or we've got to get in on this. I mean, supposing we want to join up with Idaho when they're doing this to their own farmers and really all the people in America. I mean, all the this food is going to be important for us.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go do a deeper dive on your email, and maybe I can get someone that knows something about that. But I appreciate the tip on it. All right. I will confess, just between you and me, a lot of times I ignore the emails on the weekend just because I need a break. You know how that goes sometimes?
I hear you.
Yeah, yeah. And then on Monday, it's just like, oh, my gosh, look at all this craziness that's coming. Oh, my gosh, there's Lucretia. But you know we love you, okay?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, this is good. Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks again for the tip. And we'll get on that and see what kind of intrusions they're dealing with. And because I know that farming, certainly small-scale farming, under attack in the state of Oregon, too. All right, Commissioner Dave Dotterer, Jackson County, joins me here in a couple of minutes. We're going to talk about that Housing Department 2020 wildfire grant, and they're just saying that, Jackson, we're just bad people, I guess, apparently. We're not following the rule. I don't know. But anyway, we'll talk with Dave about that because he's been the point person for this particular program. We'll do a deep dive on that coming up next.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros and Full Service Auto Repair.
Did your mobile provider just increase their prices again? Switch to Spectrum Mobile, the nation's fastest growing mobile provider. With Spectrum Mobile, you get unlimited talk, text, and data, plus nationwide 5G. Switching to Spectrum Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your phone balance up to $2,500. Stop dealing with price hikes from your cell phone company. Get Spectrum Mobile. Visit Spectrum.com/itpays to switch for full details. Offer subject to change. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Turn up your radio. Here's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Yeah, the Democrats, they were lying to you. And Joe Biden leading the way, he was lying to you. And then followed up by the media mob, they were lying to you. Now, ask yourself, do you think if the country knew that it was true, that this laptop was very real, that the odds were pretty high, that it would have impacted the 2020 election in states where as few as, you know, 10, 12,000 votes made all the difference? Yeah, I think that's a pretty logical conclusion. Did they all put their cinder blocks on the scales to help their favored candidate, Joe Biden, win? Yeah, they did. Who led the lying campaign? Joe Biden.
Check out the Sean Hannity Radio Show later today, right here.
War, inflation, and recession. Did you know that experts call gold the everything hedge? Gold goes far beyond hedging against inflation or the stock market. It can potentially even guard you against today's wars in Ukraine and the Middle East. Not to mention the great economic danger of a recession coming, which is what we're all worried about. And that's why gold just hit another record high. And central banks, they just keep buying gold at a record pace. It's Linda here. Join me and thousands of people who have called Goldco the number one rated gold company. It's time you diversify your money with time-tested safe haven assets, physical gold and silver. Today, Goldco is offering our listeners up to 8 years in free IRA fees, plus up to 8% in bonus silver with a qualified account. Call 855-815-GOLD for free IRA fees, free bonus silver, and a free gold and silver info kit. What are you waiting for? Call 855-815-GOLD. That's 855-815-G-O-L-D. Do it today. You can't wait.
106.3 KMED, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
14 after 7. Pleasure to have Jackson County Commissioner Dave Dotterer on. Dave, welcome back. Great to have you on. Good morning, sir.
Great to be back with you.
Dave, I wanted to take a dive into this. I hope it's not too confusing of a story here, because we've had all sorts of intrusions, whether it's the jet boats on the Rogue River, whether it's the OWEB with the wells, whether it's the resource management plan. It just seems like there's a bunch of attacks coming everywhere. And this is a weird story that came out a few days ago about a 2020 wildfire grant and the Oregon Housing and Community Services dusting it up with Jackson County. And I'm wondering if you could explain what this grant was all about and take us back to, you know, people. So you just don't want to go with what the TV or the newspaper said on that. Where did it start? Could you help us out on that?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, let's go back to the very beginning. You know, back in the spring of 2021, let's see, that's 3+ years ago, the Congress of the United States went ahead and appropriated $422 million. That's almost a half a billion dollars for 2020 fire disaster recovery. That's for the whole state.
Okay.
All right. That's for Marion County and Lane County, everybody else. And this was meant, and I've gone to the actual bill, and it says specifically, this is for recovery, for housing, infrastructure, economic and business revitalization and mitigation. Okay, it's got a very, very specific word.
Okay.
So this money was provided by the federal taxpayer. You know, that's the people of Bar Harbor, Maine, and Biloxi, Mississippi, to help their fellow citizens after these devastating fires. It was not to solve problems that we've created for ourselves, like affordable housing and housing shortages and everything like that. And what happened was it was handed over, because it was looked at as mostly as housing, to the Oregon Housing and Community Services. That's the agency that the money went to. And what they initially planned for was most of the money was going to go for housing and a little bit of infrastructure.
And by the way, Dave, or Commissioner, yeah, how much money was allocated or granted to Jackson County for this purpose of wildfire recovery?
It was, at the time, there was no specific money going to an area.
Oh, okay.
I'll get to another part. When they broke this thing out, then they did go ahead and give a specific amount to the Jackson County area, not to Jackson County proper, but to Jackson County. And what we saw was that, well, look, it doesn't make a lot of sense for you to build a whole bunch of housing if these people don't have jobs. And we know that there was severe loss of businesses and things they're missing. So how about we peel out some money? Now, I know, Bill, that you normally stand up when you're doing your talking, but I hope your listeners are sitting down, because at one point, Dave Dotterer sat down next to Darby Ayers Flood, the mayor of Talent, and you can well imagine we don't share political beliefs exactly.
No.
And we were right on the same piece, which was, hey, you know what, OHCS, you need to peel off some of this money for economic revitalization and to help businesses.
Well, which makes a lot of sense, because, you know, to have a whole bunch of people having housing rebuilt for them and no jobs to go right to, what's the point? What, to be on welfare? That's not going to be of much help, really, in the grand scheme.
Yeah, that's not. No, and so what they did was, believe it or not, I didn't think they would do this, but believe it or not, they peeled off $42 million of the $422 million. Not about a math major, but even I can figure out, after graduating from the third grade, that that's a 90-10 split. So they took 10% of the money and said, okay, we'll put it over here into this program called PEER, Planning, Infrastructure, and Economic Revitalization.
Got it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, notice what they did was they left infrastructure there and they wanted housing infrastructure to come out of that 10%. So it wasn't all economic revitalization. See how they're starting to play with the numbers here a little bit?
And I everything. Do.
So anyway, so what they did was they actually allocated 13.8 million of that 42 to Jackson County. We got the biggest amount of all the counties. And again, it didn't come to the county government. This is all informal. It came just to the area. And so that's the number we started with. Okay. So at the time, the OHCS rep, because I knew him, Alex Campbell and everything, he came to me informally and said, "Hey, I think what we really ought to do is form a committee, because what we want to do is we want to informally put together a selection committee to help us make the decisions and determine how to best these funds." Okay. And he specifically said, "Hey, we're going to depend on your judgment to determine out what's best for the whole community." And also got together, started talking. I do economic development for Jackson County. That's one of my area. That's my area. And so we thought, well, you know what? Let's put together a committee that makes sense. Keep it kind of small. So we thought, okay, well, we have three jurisdictions here: Jackson County, we have the city of Talent, and we have the city of Phoenix. And then let's see, we also have Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development, an organization which is in place, is all staffed up, and is in fact receives money from local jurisdictions to run. Well, now, if you're going to do economic development, gosh almighty, who else would you put on the panel other than that? And then we also had this organization called the Long-Term Recovery Group, and that was the fifth member. We went to them, and we said, okay, here's our group, and here's what we're thinking. And we got a head nod from them. There was nothing formal here. There was just a head nod. And so so that's what we went with. And I think what's really important also is there's this discussion about, well, what was the money really meant to do and everything? Because we at OHCS have got our own ideas. We were specifically told that we want you to come up with what you believe is best for the community for this money.
All right. So at first, OHCS tells you then, you, Jackson County, and your group then will come up with the best way to help the community. And then, okay, and that sounds reasonable because OHCS doesn't live here, right? They don't live here. They don't understand the lay of the land. And everyone that you talked about does. That was part of this. Was it the selection committee, or what was it called again?
It was referred to as the Jackson County Peer Selection Committee. And
okay.
I'm looking at it right now, Bill. I'm looking right now. We, in October of 2022, let's see, how many months ago was that? 17? Yeah, that was a year and a half ago. We put together a statement of intent, which we showed to OHCS. We wrote this all out. And we said, here is committee priorities. I'm going to read it to you. Committee priorities: the largest unmet needs in Jackson County outside of housing are business and economic recovery. As such, the committee will prioritize projects and programs that directly support businesses, encourage commercial development, and attract new business. We even bolded those last few words. We got a head nod. Hey, you guys know what's best for the community, and you go forward and do this.
Okay, when did they pull the rug out from underneath this process, though? I hear a big butt coming real soon.
Yes, yeah, real soon. And we went through this process, went out for applications, and put together, and we debated this, and we decided what we were going to do, and we were called a selection committee, but we were just advisors. It was their decision in the end, obviously. You know, we didn't have the, quote, authority. That's why this was an informal process. And about 6 months ago, then they changed the leadership of the group. And all of a sudden, we're finding that this is what Salem is telling us to do. And they're changing the rules on us and claiming that, well, what's really happening here is, you know, this is a federal program. And I get it, Bill. You know, goodness, federal programs come with all kinds of rules and everything like that. But this was meant to be an informal process. And here's the other problem with this. About 2 years ago, I naively was sitting in a meeting, and one of our ideas was, you know what? These businesses need this money quickly. you know, they're not going to survive. And so we need to get that money out as quickly as we can. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, I naively sat in a meeting and said, you know, I don't know why we can't get this money out the door by January of 23. You know, what, 16 months ago, 17 months ago or so. And we still haven't gotten money out the door.
So yeah, businesses die during that time. Could you tell me, though, where this story came from, where all of a sudden OHCS ended up turning into a diversity, equity, and inclusion cop of sorts, and that they were concerned about the lack of Latino and Latina and Latinx, that ridiculous term, representation on the selection committee? What, did you not pick and choose people by racial categories? Is that what they're claiming now, why you shouldn't get the money, why the money shouldn't be coming here?
They want to change the rules of engagement on this, and they want us to expand the committee to include a representative from an organization that directly supports historically underserved community members. Where that wording comes from.
Yeah. Well, you know, given that practically everybody was destroyed, why? You know, we're talking about 2,300 homes and businesses. At last count, wasn't that about what it was? It wasn't exactly. It wasn't discriminatory, and the poorer you were, you know, like those poor elderly people down in the mobile home parks on Bear Creek, the more likely you were to be completely wiped out with nothing.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's what I'm saying. For about 2 years, we were rolling along, doing what we thought was best for the community, doing this according to what we believed were the rules, and then all of a sudden, OHCS decided to become woke here on us and start putting in all these rules about we have to expand representation like that. Oh, and then here's the other thing. In spite of it, they're going to go ahead and let some of them go forward. But it does say that selection committee members, here's the fourth thing we have to do. It says committee members must complete equity training, specifically centered on equity and racial justice in disaster recovery and provided by OHCS.
What the hell does that have to do with providing wildfire recovery to the communities? What does that do? What does that have? What does that have to do with anything except their hard left communist politics out of Salem? What does that have to do with anything?
It doesn't. They're making this stuff up, and that's the way they look. That's the lens they look at the world through.
Is that the lens required by, Commissioner Dodder, is that required by the grant? I'm just curious, by the grant from the feds, though. I'm just wondering, is this a Fed rule that's coming through?
Well, you know what? I'll have to say that that I don't know that specifically, whether or not that's true or not, you know, but I'm just telling you that that's not what was sold to us. And they knew what the rules were at the very beginning, you know. And so I've got to have to go into the mirror on that one. But, you know, it clearly came out that way. And I suspect, though, I've been told that it's not as complex as what Salem is making it. And they're adding these rules in because this is their narrative and these are their objectives. These are not our objectives. Our belief was, look, Soretti is a great organization which has helped people of all stripes, of all colors, of all economic levels, and has done it fairly and straightforward. The Long-Term Recovery Group does that.
Yeah, I don't recall Soretti having like they ask you color when you join them. I don't recall anything like that.
No, and you have elected representatives from the three jurisdictions who, in fact, represent the whole community. We don't represent just certain people of certain colors or anything like that. We represent everybody. And so that works out that way. And so what you really have here are a couple of bigger issues I think that your listeners need to be aware of. Is first off, you know, let's step back here because this was cooking along just fine, and we were working together really well. And then the City of Talent decided to change their representation on the committee. And now all of a sudden, it wasn't their city manager; it was one of their city councilors who did this. And I got to tell you, right now, for me as a county commissioner, this is three strikes for them. If you recall, Bill, a couple of years ago, they came out with a scheme about urban renewal, which I think Danny Jordan said it exactly right. It was diabolical, where they were going to yet millions and millions of dollars, and they were going to get the money from all the other taxing districts around there and use it for their own purposes. You know, the hell with whatever happened to the fire district
or anyone else. Yeah,
everybody else. Okay. Then what did they do a few months ago when the fire district had these issues with their board composition? Well, three out of five members went ahead and resigned. And all of a sudden they came to the county commissioners by state law. We're supposed to take care of that. But they only wanted us to put one person on so that their two people remaining would pick the other two. And now talent would control four out of five of those positions. Well, we crossed them up and went ahead and appointed all three. And I think we did exactly the right thing in there. Okay. Well, now we now have them, as far as I'm concerned, feeding at the trough here and playing the system, and they want to control the committee. And I have no intention of letting that happen. That's not what's best for talent. I'm okay with talent getting what they need, but what's best for talent is not what's best for the community. And we need to look at it that way.
Is the city of talent, the government of talent in your opinion here, Dave, is it messing with the OHCS wildfire grant funding, or did they kind of raise this and poke this bear?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, here's it all. What one of the things that it actually says is that one of the other requirements that just came down about a month ago, month and a half ago, is it says Jackson County must appoint a new representative to the selection committee. That's get rid of Dotterer to eliminate the perceived conflict of interest. Okay, where did this perceived conflict?
Yeah, what's the conflict?
From?
Yeah, what's the conflict of interest there? You have an elected commissioner from all of Jackson County on this selection committee. That seems to be someone who's looking out for the good of all.
Well, absolutely. Well, their issue was that, well, you also happen to be on the board of directors of Cerretti, which makes sense. Doesn't it make sense? Because since the Jackson County gives money there, that we have somebody on there. And they said, well, you can't have two. So, you know, it looks like Cerretti has got extra votes and everything like that. I said, okay, great. And I resigned from their board. You know, I didn't want to, but I just said, okay, if that's a technical thing.
All right.
Well, that's what they, that was, that, then all of a sudden it became, it went from being, well, Cerretti has two voting members to it became a perceived conflict of interest, which of course, county council is made very clear. There was no formal appointment here. And not only that, a conflict of interest is based upon the fact that I would have some kind of fiduciary or fiscal conflict here, which of course I don't.
No.
There's no money that flows to me. I don't get paid as a board member of Cerretti. So, you know, there's no conflict there. But see how this perceived thing enters into this. And what we really have is they're feeding at the trough, playing the system. They know how to get this money for themselves.
Yeah, what is this? Yeah, is the game they're playing, is talent just trying to suck up the grease? Is that all they're trying to do?
I think that's exactly what they're doing. And here's what's really maddening about this. If you recall, when I started this all out, we sat down with OHCS and said, this money, $13.8 million, what they finally gave us, should be there for economic and business development. That's what we said was our committee intent.
Okay.
As it is right now, they've essentially, what they did was then what OHCS did was they peeled off 30% and said, well, we're going to keep 30%. You don't get to decide how to do that because.
Boy, the rules keep getting changed.
Yeah, right.
Every time Jackson County does something with this OHCS system, the goalpost gets moved every day, it seems. Wow.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And here we are. Here we are. We entered into this with good faith, thinking we were going to help them out and everything. They keep changing the rules, so this gets tough. So all of a sudden, 13.8 becomes 9.6, and then they went ahead and just arbitrarily handed out the rest of the money, even though that's not what we wanted them to do and everything. And so now what we've actually had is, if you actually step back from $13.8 million for economic revitalization as it sits right now, only 13% of it is going to go to economic revitalization,
which is a very small percentage of that,
right,
of that money.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, that's the problem. Here we set out with what we thought was the best of intents and good faith, And when we get to the end of this program, we go, wait a minute, what happened here? You know, how does the state agency arbitrarily and capriciously decide that the local folks don't know what's best for their area and end up with doing something which was never intended?
That's how we work. Could it be? And I'm sorry to bring dirty politics into this, Commissioner Dodderer. Could this have some reaction? Is this some blowback maybe from Jackson County not voting the right way on Jackson County for All and politics? All the political friends connected with that wanted this sort of, hey, we'll show you. Or is there? You know, am I just being a little too conspiratorial about this?
I don't put anything out of the realm of possibility. But I have no proof that that's going on. I've seen nothing.
You
can suspect it, but I have seen nothing that tells me that that's true.
Okay. All right.
And
just thought I'd ask. So
I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Sure.
What happens now then? What happens now as we move forward? So it's going to be the 9 million something rather than the 13.8 million. And what does Talon get an undue cut of the grease that wasn't distributed to Jackson County as a whole?
Here's what's ironic about this. Several months ago, when the committee voted on how to hand out this money, the votes were 4-1. And Talent, for example, voted against giving infrastructure money to Phoenix because Phoenix played by the rules and put together a wonderful application in which here's what we said. Well, okay, if it's going to be infrastructure, that infrastructure has to support business development. So the smart people at Phoenix put together an application in which they took their burned out business area and they're going to put in the infrastructure. So if you're moving in there, the city has already put in the sidewalks and the storm drains and the parking lots. You don't have to pay for that. You just put it in. And we say, well, that makes sense. God, that's helping businesses a lot and everything. Okay. And so what happens? Talent votes against that because it was clear that what we were doing was we were giving more than half of the money we wanted to put into infrastructure to them. And they said, that's unfair. He said, oh, well, no, they got it. You haven't put in an application yet. They put in a great application. So we're going to give more than half the money.
Yeah. Okay. It wasn't politics that got Talent or that got Phoenix more money. It was because they were more competent and put together a better proposal.
Oh my gosh!
From what I'm hearing, right? Is that it?
Yeah, it's a wonderful proposal. It's exactly what it followed our intent. Funny, isn't that funny? We put together a committee intent, and they follow the rules. Talent didn't follow the rules. Okay, so then what happens is that at the end of all of this, we make this recommendation, and OHCS decides, well, you know what? We're just going to hand out virtually all of the 9.6 million, and we're going to give Talent extra money here that they asked for, which we didn't appropriate for them.
Uh-huh.
We did give them some money for their infrastructure because they did have some good ideas and everything, but they just gave them the rest of the money. And now the ironic thing is the reason that the Talent representative voted against giving that money to Phoenix was because it wasn't equitable. They weren't getting their fair share.
Well, now you see equitable.
Has given out the rest of the money. And the irony is this: Talent now gets 25% more money than Phoenix does. I mean,
but Talent didn't follow the rules. But Talent didn't follow the rules. Okay,
that's correct.
So in other words, I guess
you can't make this up, Bill.
All right. So being incompetent, or just not following the rules, then I don't know if Talent's incompetent or not. But the fact that they didn't follow the rules, why follow the rules here? All you have to do is have the right political friends within the administrative state. That's my suspicion. I'm just going to stick with it. I don't have any proof, but it does seem awfully hinky. Just seems awfully hinky to me. That's all. Okay.
I can tell you that right now. I can tell you that one of their former employees who now works for the county, and I checked with her to make sure it was okay for me to say this publicly,
mm-hmm.
but she now works for the county. And I asked her, I said, first off, you're really smiling a lot here. I see. And she goes, God, I would love working for the county now. And her comment, I said, well, why did you leave talent? And she said, I could no longer stomach the hypocrisy and shenanigans of the mayor.
Interesting. All right.
You know, and this is just a dumpster fire. That's what this is.
All right. And the dumpster fire continues smoldering, apparently. Commissioner, yes. I appreciate you sharing a little bit and doing a deeper dive. And I know, maybe some people, their eyes glaze over a little bit about this, but it has to do with the politicization of the funding process on recovery. And you would have thought that everybody was all gathered together and in agreement of what needed to be done. And then politics, including diversity, equity, and inclusion, had to rear its ugly head in this process. And a final question I would have for you, though, is there any evidence that that businesses died waiting for some of this recovery money to possibly have made it in?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have stories from folks who are saying, you know, I'm just hanging on by a thread here. That's why we 2 years ago said we got to get this money out the door. That's what Rotary did. Rotary got money out the door in about 3 or 4 months to save some of those. Save some of those companies, just get some money in their hands. So, for example, you know, say we helped out some, for example, and I'm at Rotary, and we helped out some companies. For example, let's say you had a lawn care organization, you lost all of your equipment because your truck burned up. And we took them down to Ace Hardware and bought them all their new equipment, just paid for it, got them back in business. That's what needed to happen here. But instead, we've got this bureaucratic thing. And what this does also, Bill, is it shows how Salem believes it knows best what works for their agenda, as even though they mouth these words like they did at the beginning, is we want to make sure that what's being done here is what's best for the community. But instead, they've injected themselves into this. This is about their agenda, not about ours.
I think that when you hear Salem talk about what's best for the community, it's the it should be redefined as what is best for our political friends. And I'm going to leave it at that. And it's
okay.
Any lessons learned from this?
I'm not going to debate you on that.
Okay.
One, buddy.
Any lessons? All right. Any lessons learned with this from the county, from the county's perspective?
Well, first off, it shows me how. Again, a bureaucratic political process can be manipulated, and how, as I said, we have Salem deciding what's best for us, and how somebody who knows how to feed at the trough and how to play the system can get what they want, even though what they want is not necessarily what's best for the community at large. And it also tells me this, you know, it tells me that in the long run, the state of Oregon really doesn't care that much about economic and business development. They care about what they want, because 13%, really, Bill, that's how this has turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my lesson.
Okay, 13% of not enough. All right.
That's correct.
All right. Commissioner, right. I appreciate the story, and it's something to know, and I understand that everybody who reads or watches any stories on this will not be getting as complete a picture as I think you painted over the last 20 or so minutes. Okay. And
yep.
Thank you very much. And we'll have you back. All the best. And thanks for taking the time. All right. You be well.
All right. Take care.
Jackson bye-bye. County Commissioner Dave Dotterer. It is 7:42. We ran a little bit long, but I wanted to hear the whole bloody process there. 770-5633. We have some open phone time coming up after news. This is the Bill Maier Show.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastles offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on-site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastles' friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastles, where the customer is king.
The term for people who are both hungry and angry is hangry. Well, Garrison Sleep has coined a new word for that annoying, irritable feeling from spending another sleepless night on a crappy mattress. It's called slangry. And the only known treatment is a new mattress from Garrison Sleep. Our team has the tools and the talent to map and match you with the mattress of your dreams. At Garrison Sleep, we specialize in slanger management and mattresses too. Garrisons.com. We got your back. Literally.
We're talking today with Plan Z dieter Ron. Here's Ron's story.
I've gained and lost weight about four times in my life, but now I'm 64 and I was up in the 240s and I thought it's time to get it off. I started in January and 35 days later I'd lost 35 pounds. What I liked most about Plan Z was the results. You lose weight and it comes off fast.
Ron didn't tell his family he was doing Plan Z. Their reaction?
My brother and sister-in-law go away in the wintertime and they came back and I hadn't told them that I was doing this and they were just shocked. They said, wow, how much have you lost? And I said, 35 pounds. That was just, yeah.
If you're serious about losing weight this time, check out PlanZDiet.com. The average dieter loses 31 pounds in just 50 days. Plan Z is guaranteed. Watch the free movie at PlanZDiet.com to get details. You can have results like Ron got, too.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MillettConstruction.com.
With SRN News, I'm Jeremy House in Washington. Conservative parties rattled the traditional powers in the European Union with major gains in parliamentary seats. The surge by nationalist and populist parties will make it much harder for the Assembly to approve legislation on issues ranging from climate change to agricultural policy. Benny Gantz, a centrist member of Israel's three-man war cabinet, has announced his resignation, accusing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of mismanaging the war effort. The move does not immediately pose a threat to Netanyahu, who still controls a majority coalition in parliament. Apple's annual Worldwide Developers Conference is expected to herald the company's move into generative artificial intelligence. On Wall Street, the Dow is off 36.5 points. The Nasdaq is down by 7. More details at SRNnews.com.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, Jason with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros with more spring savings. Right now, purchase a set of four qualifying Yokohama tires through June 15th and get up to a $100 rebate. Get an additional $50 when you purchase with your Tire Pros credit card. There's 14 different tires to choose from, including Geolander AT for your truck or SUV and the Avid Ascend LX for your passenger car. So stop by or call for details to save right now on quality Yokohama tires exclusively at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
Moving Out, this 1977 pop classic by Billy Joel, is about pursuing a brighter future and could also be your reaction when you see cracks in walls and ceilings, sloping floors, and unlevel door jams. Millett Construction can fix your foundation, re-level your home, and correct the unstable ground that's causing the damage. So who needs a house out in Hackensack? Get your current home on solid ground by calling Millett Construction for a free estimate. Visit MillettConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
Do you think Dad wants another tie this Father's Day? Heck no! Get Dad a banging gift from Good Guys Guns. Good Guys is filled with all the things Dad really wants. With over 130 handgun models in stock, rifles, shotguns, hard-to-find ammo, holsters, target stands, red dots, and optics, Good Guys has the perfect gift. Not sure what Dad needs? Good Guys has gift cards too. Good Guys Guns, the Valley's firearm leader. At 4934 Crater Lake Avenue in Medford, Good Guys Guns.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Barkley with American Rancher Garage, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
747. Hey, anytime I have a bumper with some cowbell in it, it's a good day. All right? Join the conversation, 770-563-3770-KMED. Amazing the politics involved. Just getting a few million dollars into helping businesses recover, because it's not just enough to have, you know, housing replaced, but you'd like to have some healthy businesses there too. That's an interesting conversation there with Dave Dauterer. I tell you, just want to shake your head, shake your head. Well, elections have consequences. Yes, even in the city of Talent. 770-5633 to break that down if you want to, or anything else that happens to be on your mind. I know last hour we had just mentioned briefly, Oregon Department of Transportation is wanting to, well, find which way you would prefer to be screwed the best when it comes to paying for the roads. They're short about $1.7 billion, so what, is it going to be raising the gas tax? Is it going to be going to chipping your car for the Ori Go type of problem, you know, or should we be tolling the roads? And they're doing this roadshow over the next few days, and I guess they're going to discuss pretty soon how they're going to give it to us, good and hard, I would imagine. But how would you prefer? How would you prefer? And also, how would you tax the electric vehicles mooching the roadways right now? How would you do that? We can talk about it. 770-5633. Over the weekend, when I was just having a little bit of a fun time reading, I was linked to this article on LouRockwell.com on the weekend deal. And it was about why the schools went public. Why the schools went public. It was absolutely a fascinating article. And it was a really old article that I had never read. It was from Reason Magazine. Now, Reason Magazine is a libertarian magazine. I've been a subscriber for a number of years. I subscribe to that and a bunch of other ones, New American and all sorts of good stuff. And the only problem I have with a lot of the libertarians is that quite often it's never really a good governing. They don't really have a good idea on, you know, governing principles per se. But when it comes to economics, they're usually pretty sound on a lot of stuff. But still, you know, they're all about libertinism, I think, in some ways, which is why I kind of broke off with being a pure libertarian. Just couldn't handle that approach anymore. But back in 1979, the March of 1979 issue of Reason Magazine, I was graduating from high school at this time when this article came out, and I'd never read it until Lou Rockwell linked to it. It's called Why the Schools Went Public. And nobody ever looks back as to how do we get to the point where there's public schools, like public schools are automatically considered to be a public good. When prior to that, we were actually much more literate of people and had much better education with the schools that had been in place. There were private schools, there were dame schools, there were dame schools. There were also many parochial schools, schools through the church. And people wanted you to be literate for the Bible, wanted you to be an informed citizen. There were scholarships that were given to poor people so that they were able to, you know, attend. Not that it was a perfect system, but arguably you had a much more literate people back in the day than you do now. And we have these insanely expensive public schools, And we're told that the problem is just lack of money. Well, they were doing a lot more with a lot less back in the day. And what Samuel Blumenfeld wrote in Reason back in 1979, in the early 1800s, private schools were thriving. Then a small group of wealthy intellectuals decided they had largely accomplished their goal. And here for the first time is the story of their campaign. And gosh, this story needs to be talked about more. A lot of the reason why we have public schools now, public schools are considered the default position to take with our kids, is due to Boston and Harvard, okay? And I'm going to skip forward in the article a few pages, because they get to the point which I think is pretty key. Man and God. The first 50 years of American history, Blumenfeld writes, are generally passed over lightly by scholars. We know some general facts about the period, the framing of the Constitution, the Louisiana Purchase of the Jacksonian area, but we are seldom made aware of the incredible intellectual and philosophical changes from pre-industrial to industrial society. The emphasis in the history books is always on political process. In Politics and Progress, the invention of the steamboat, the development of the railroads, the invention of the cotton gin. But what also took place during that period was an intellectual event of great importance, and it was the takeover of Harvard University by the Unitarians in 1805 and the expulsion of the Calvinists. The Calvinists were essentially the Pilgrims' way of looking at things, like, you know, you work hard and then you die. You know, I don't know. But anyway, it was a little more of a, I shouldn't say dour. There's another term that I'm thinking about it. But the takeover was, with the Unitarians taking over, they took over the Citadel. Well, they became the Citadel of anti-Calvinism. And it took Blumenfeld months to understand the significance of this. No event has had greater long-range influence on America and on America's education than this one. The issue at stake were fundamental, Blumenfeld writes, the nature of God and the nature of man. The liberals brought free, prosperous, ever-expanding expanding society, and they could no longer accept the Calvinist worldview. The liberals found that the Calvinist doctrines of innate depravity, predestination, essentially Calvin's was a God-centered worldview in which a man's life is determined by his personal relationship with God and his will in the Old and New Testaments. The Unitarians rejected all of this. They couldn't believe in the existence of an unfair, unjust God that favors some and condemns the rest. Calvin was the first to admit that these doctrines seem unjust, but that there's a limit on what man is permitted to know and that man, therefore, has no choice but to accept the cold, hard facts of life. You know, essentially. Those facts include the existence of evil, the sufferings of the innocent, etc., etc. The Unitarians accepted the notion that God created man, but also insisted that man was given to sin. It is man himself who can decide through his life on earth whether he goes to heaven or hell. In other words, man is perfectible. Man is perfectible. This is where the Unitarians, they took over Harvard and they kicked out the Calvinists. And there's more to that, and I'll share that here in just a moment. In just a moment after the break, where they were going, what else happened in the early 1800s when the Calvinists were kicked out of Harvard and when the Unitarians took over. And it's very important, and it has a lot to do with something else that happened in the 1800s that is still infecting America today. And I'll share a bit of that from Blumenfeld's article. Hang on just a second.
If you really want to enjoy your open-air spaces, talk to American Industrial Door. They're an authorized dealer for Terra Screen Systems. From porches, patios, and gazebos to restaurant seating areas to warehouses, these custom-made motorized screens and vinyl panels are a permanent solution to keep pest, wind, and rain out so you can enjoy outdoor environments in peace. Go see all the possibilities DuraScreen Systems have to offer at American Industrial Door, with showrooms on Union Avenue and Grants Pass and Crater Lake Avenue north of Vilas Road.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precise and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease of quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today, get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736.
How can you avoid the stress and headaches of selling your home in today's market? Hey, it's Lars, and let me tell you, the only agent in Medford that can save you from all that stress is Jared Hokanson with Hokanson Realty. Don't let the negative media reports about interest rates stop you. Get the facts from a professional. Jared has years of experience and in-depth knowledge of the market right here in Medford. Jared has the right strategic options for you. And in this market, when he puts his marketing to work for you, that strategy helps attract the right kind of buyers at the right time who are willing to pay top dollar. Jared even guarantees to sell your home at a price and a deadline you agree to, or Jared buys the home instead. Real estate expert and Shark Tank star Barbara Corcoran and I both recommend only Jared Hokanson in Medford and in Southern Oregon. Call Jared today at 541-772-SOLD. Or go online to 541-772-SOLD.com and tell Jared Lars sent you.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your work truck and van headquarters. Proudly offering Adrian Steel interior shelving packages, partitions, and the best ladder racks in the business. Integrate a bed slide or decked drawer system to boost your efficiency. Also featuring the largest selection of commercial fiberglass and metal truck canopies from leading manufacturers such as ARE, SmartCap, Century, and more. Come see Oregon Truck and Auto Authority today and take your efficiency to the next level.
Last chance, I'll flip you for it.
All right.
Too late.
The verdict is in.
We're really thankful that the New York jury came back with 34 counts guilty.
And the party begins.
I feel very happy.
He should be removed.
This is how America is supposed to work.
But take care how you celebrate.
It's quite the clown show.
This is invalid.
The American people aren't going to fall for it.
It's going to backfire on the Democrats.
This will just make Trump stronger.
He's going to make America great again.
Talk about the effects on election 2024.
I will vote for him for the third time, even if he's in jail.
On News Talk 106.3. KMED.
106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Couple minutes before 8 o'clock, this is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass at 99.3 FM, K290 AF, Rogue River. Yes, 105.9. That's where you can listen to all of KMED's lineup in Grants Pass now. And K294 AS, Ashland, South County. Okay? I wanted to complete the thought of one of the most fascinating articles that I have read in weeks. And it's a 45-year-old article in Reason Magazine about why the schools went public. Why have we been saddled with such a corrupt, ineffective public school system? And this was 45 years ago. This article did not make a lot of noise back then, but Lou Rockwell brought it back over the weekend, and it just cracked me up. It cracked me up in a good way. This is where it came from. And it had to do with the source of public education in the United States instead of the private education that was much better and much more effective at that point. It all started with the Unitarians kicking out the Calvinists out of Harvard College, Harvard University, which was kind of the controlling educational world in Massachusetts and in Boston. And remember, the Calvinists were had evil exists, the suffering of the innocent, the triumph of tyrants, the general difficulties of the human condition in a world ruled by an omnipotent God who, despite all of this, is still the benevolent God. Anyway, the thing is, the Unitarians didn't believe this. The Unitarians accepted the notion that God created man, but they also insisted that man was given the freedom to make of his life whatever he can. It is a man himself who can decide through his life on earth whether he goes to heaven or hell. He is not innately depraved. He is, in fact, rational and perfectible, all right? As for the existence of evil, Blumenfeld wrote, they believed that it is caused by ignorance, poverty, social injustice, and other environmental and social factors. Education, according to the Unitarians, is the only way to solve the problem of evil. Education will eliminate ignorance, which will eliminate poverty, which will eliminate social injustice, which will eliminate crime. Moral progress is an attainable secular salvation, in other words. This is what the Unitarians in Boston were pushing when they kicked the Calvinists out of Harvard, okay? Secular salvation, it was therefore only natural that the Unitarians would shift their practice of religion from the worship of a harmless, benevolent God of limited powers to the creation of an institution on earth to improve the character of man. The one institution that the Unitarians decided could be used to carry out this task was the public school. They focused on public education. Their first organized effort was the campaign in 1818 to create primary public schools in Boston. Why only public schools, you might ask, right? And why not private or charity schools? Well, here's the deal. Private schools were run and controlled by individuals who might have entirely different worldviews concerning the nature of man. And certainly the Calvinists did. Besides, private schools were forced by economic reality to concentrate on teaching skills rather than forming character. Well, the Unitarians wanted to mold the perfect man, right? As for the church schools, they were too sectarian, and the charity schools were usually run by Calvinists. Only the public schools controlled in Boston by wealthy Unitarians could become that secular instrument of salvation. It's a fascinating read here. I'm just going to conclude a little bit here. But why did the first organized effort take place in 1818? Because at around that time, a man in Scotland had proudly broadcast to the entire civilized world that he had discovered the basic principle of moral improvement. Moral improvement. Now, remember that. His name was Robert Owen. And we know him today as the father of socialism. Robert Owen, self-made man who became a social messiah when he discovered what he considered to be about the basic truth of human character, that a man's character is made for him by society through upbringing, education, and environment, not by himself, as the religionist taught. Children in a cannibal society grew up to be adult cannibals. Children in a selfish, competitive society grew up to be selfish and competitive. No one is innately depraved or evil. An infant is a glob of plastic that the state can mold into having whatever character the state wishes him to have. You starting to see where they're going with this one? We're thinking that socialism is an old, is a relatively new development here in the United States. No, no, we're going back a couple hundred years, really. Owen started publishing his ideas in 1813, and to prove that he was right, in 1816, established his Institution for the Formation of Character at New Lanark through a secular scientific curriculum coupled with the notion that every student must strive to make his fellow pupils happy. Owen hoped to turn out little rational, cooperative human beings devoid of selfishness, superstition, and all of the other traits he found in capitalist man. All of these ideas were music to the ears of the Boston Unitarians. Remember the wealthy Unitarians who wanted confirmation that man is perfectible through the education process. But Owen had stressed that the earlier you start training the child, the better chance you have to mold his character, which is why the Unitarians launched their campaign to create public schools. And this was only the first step. For in 1816, Owen had published an essay outlining a plan for a national system of education whereby the character of a whole nation could be molded to the good of all. Thus, socialism began as the educational movement to reform the character of United States man into future man. Blumenfeld says, today we call it Soviet man. That's right. And now this was 1979. We were still talking Soviet man at that point. Leaving education to chance meant leaving it private. And that's why in 1818, the Unitarians insisted on creating public primary schools rather than subsidizing pupils to attend private ones. It was also the beginning of the organized movement that was to culminate in the creation of our compulsory, you must attend it, public education system. And it all started with the socialists and the Unitarians at Harvard and in Boston. It's an interesting thing, and it's not talked about nearly enough, and we're still suffering from that today when we make the default position that obviously public education is the way to go. Well, not if you want to have a free-thinking people. It never was about free-thinking people. It was about creating socialists. It's 5 minutes after 8.
Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point is a family diner designed to please everyone in the family. Along with 13 burgers, there's 8 fresh sandwiches and 7 different melts all served.